Thank you for visiting HawkeyeJive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our seventh edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeJive.com. Well, that was not the performance that I'm sure a lot of you envisioned Iowa having there last weekend. Coming off a bye week, they go out to Penn State for the Big Ten opener. And they come away losers by the score of 13-3. Now, basically, to just kind of recap what happened here, the offense got off to a bit of a slow start. It looked like they were going to move the ball effectively there at the very beginning. Then they got stalled and decided to punt, forcing Penn State to start at about its own 10-yard line, I believe. First drive, and inexplicably, Rob Bolden was the starting quarterback for Penn State, but they moved down the field. Penn State actually executed a fake field goal when they got deep into Iowa territory. However, Iowa's defense did hold. Penn State got it, then kicked an actual field goal and went ahead 3-0. Iowa would then respond with its only scoring drive of the game, tied it at 3. The Penn State would score again. Another field goal, make it 6-3. That's what the score was at halftime. That's what the score was entering the fourth quarter when the key play of the game happened. Fumble by James Vandenberg as he got sacked. Bad pickup, or bad blitz protection pickup, if you will. A lot of linebacker to get free, knocked the ball out as he hit him. Penn State recovered it. Then proceeded to march down the field on 11 plays, first 10 just being all runs, and then finally Matt McGloin threw a touchdown pass to Anthony Skirba that made it 13-3, basically put the game on ice. And then the Hawkeye offense just continued to turn the ball over there in the fourth quarter. James Vandenberg had probably his worst game. He didn't play terrible, but 17-34 for 169 yards passing, and then he doubled his interception total that he had coming into the game in the fourth quarter alone. He had one interception coming in. He threw two of them there in the fourth quarter, plus he had the fumble. Basically, there's a lot to be concerned about, I think, here if you're an Iowa fan. First of all, the offense, the fact that this team had 2 weeks to prepare for this game, and all it could come away with was 3 points. Now, granted, part of it, you got to give Penn State's defense a lot of credit. It might be as good a defense as they face all season. Who knows? I can think of at least one other team down the road that Iowa's going to play as talented a defense at this point in the year. But Penn State has a good defense, and they had a good game plan. They were not going to let Iowa win with any big plays deep down the field. They were going to force Vandenberg to check down and throw some underneath passes, which is basically what a lot of his passes ended up being there for a while. And some of them, just point blank, weren't caught. You know, it's not like the receiving core, it's not like Vandenberg is the only one that had a horrible game there for the offense. The receiving core really struggled. The other thing I would say, too, is the defense, while it only gave up 13 points, there is one major concern right now at this team, and that's the fact that offenses like Penn State were able to move the ball effectively on the ground. Okay? Penn State absolutely gashed Iowa's defense on the ground. Silas Red, big game. CJ Dukes, another solid performance. The fact that, you know, Penn State, about 60% of their offense last Saturday came from its rushing. And there was just, Iowa just struggled. And even though they only gave up 13 points, when you see Penn State executing drives of 88, 81, and 90 yards, when you see that sort of execution taking place, That's 259 yards. If my math is correct, it's 259 yards of Penn State's 395 yards of total offense. So 259 yards are picked up on three drives alone. And even though those three drives, Iowa only gave up two field goals and Micah High got an interception of Matt McGloin. At the end of the day, Iowa's going to face better offenses like the one this week in Northwestern that are capable of getting in the red zone and finishing off long drives like that with touchdowns. And if that had been the case, this game wouldn't have been close. Iowa was very fortunate to be in a position where it was only down by a field goal there in the fourth quarter before everything just kind of unraveled. And now Northwestern comes into town on Saturday. And you got to wonder at this point, okay, how's Iowa going to respond? Because Northwestern has won five of the last six. They've won the last three. They've won the last three at Kinnick Stadium. The last time Iowa won a home game against Northwestern was in 2002. Think about that for a second. 2002. That was Brad Banks, Dallas Clark. That offense, that team is the last team to beat Northwestern at home. And if Northwestern does win on Saturday, that means Northwestern will have been the only Big Ten team, excluding Nebraska, obviously, because they just joined the conference. But that means Northwestern would be the only Big Ten team that Iowa hasn't gotten a home win against over the past decade. They have home wins over everybody else. Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Wisconsin. All those teams have come into Kinnick Stadium over the past decade and have lost to Iowa. If Northwestern wins Saturday, I mean, that's pretty incredible to think about. And look, Northwestern's going to come in with obviously not as good of a defense as Penn State's, so you should expect Iowa to put up points as opposed to only scoring three last week. But again, I think this is where it's going to be centered on the defense. Can they stop Dan Persa? Can they keep Northwestern from dinking and dunking the ball down the field? Because you know that's what Northwestern's game plan is. Basically, the success they've had over Iowa the last few years has stemmed from a couple things. One, they're able to capitalize on turnovers. Iowa's had 10 of them in the last three meetings against Northwestern, and five of them have resulted in Wildcat touchdowns. The other point is they just move the ball. You see first and 10 becomes second and three. And if there is a third down, it's probably third and one. That's where Northwestern's had success over the years, folks. They find a way to pick up positive yardage on first and second down. It leads to manageable third downs. That's where they have their success on this defense. And when you have success like that, you're chewing the clock. And by the time the possession is over, if Northwestern's coming away, even with just 3 points, they may have done what Penn State just did last weekend, which is, you know, taking 8 minutes off the clock on a drive, taking 7 minutes off the clock on a drive. Makes a huge difference because then it limits the number of possessions Iowa's offense has, and it limits what they want to do. So I think, once again, Northwestern might not be as good of a team overall as Penn State, but the same challenge applies here for Iowa. And it's going to be interesting to see how this team bounces back after a performance like it had last Saturday. Got a really fun podcast here lined up for you this week. Mark Morehouse from the Cedar Rapids Gazette has agreed to come on. He will join us here in the next segment. And then the third segment, I'll be joined once again by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rau. We'll discuss last week's game against Penn State. Preview Saturday's game between Iowa and Northwestern, and we'll discuss the 10 pick'em games listed this week on HawkeyeDrive.com, which, by the way, if you want to participate in this week's pick'em, you still have plenty of time here. The deadline is 5 p.m. Central on Friday. Just go to HawkeyeDrive.com. You'll see the 24 Heisman Road page. Just hover over that. Click on the pick'em page. Then you'll see a list of 10 games. Submit your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score, your Iowa Northwestern prediction. We will use that to break any ties that may exist. Whoever obviously has a closer score to what the actual final is would then win the prize that we have each week. So when we come back, Mark Morehouse from the Cedar Rapids Gazette will join me, and then later, Chris Rowell. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm pleased to be joined once again by Cedar Rapids Gazette reporter Mark Morehouse. Mark, thanks for coming on.
Hey, no problem, Brendan.
I guess first off, for you, how would you assess what you've seen of this team now after five games and after what was probably, clearly the worst game that they've played this past season against Penn State?
I think the offense is kind of looking for something that works. And, you know, Coach Ferentz, I brought up the identity crisis. Crisis is perhaps the wrong word. But I really, you know, he says they're learning about their team every week. I think that's very true. And I'm not sure they quite know exactly what works yet. I mean, they came out, they've started the season and they're regular, regular power sort of football pro set formations. They went to the, had great success with the no huddle and 2-minute drill, basically 20-minute, 2-minute drill against Pitt in the comeback. And they're kind of stuck in a world now where they don't exactly know it works. Defense, I think defense is it's light up front. It's an experience up front. There's a lot of first-year players. I think the defensive line is losing a lot. At least at Penn State, they lost a lot of battles, and that affected linebacker play. It affects flow of the defense, and so I think that was a big crimp there. Again, though, people will point to 13 points, and you should win the game with 13 points. I agree. You should win the game with 13 points.
It just seems to me, too, you mentioned that the defense, one thing that I'd noticed is even though they got stops in the red zone on these drives, the fact that Penn State was able to move the ball almost at will, having like 88, 81, 90-yard drives, it just seemed like that took a lot out of them. And in the fourth quarter, before you know it, Penn State was able to move it at will and finally score.
And then the no huddle is out of your arsenal, because if your defense has just been out there for 8 minutes, and there was an 8-minute drive, at least one that I can remember, and there was a couple other that were 11 or 12 plays, defense has that, then you can't do the no huddle. Yeah. You can't do the no huddle because Iowa had a 30-second 3-and-out and sent its defense back. I think that was the first half. You do that, and a defense that's already vulnerable, already new, is trying to restock after losing a ton of talent to the everybody from the 2008 defense is in the NFL. That takes the no huddle out, and you can't do that. You can't risk it, because if you're 3-and-out, you're sending an entire defense back out there, and it's going to be trouble.
Now, you mentioned the whole thing with the identity. What, in your opinion, do you feel it should be? You mentioned the no huddle as something that had been effective prior to last Saturday's game. Do you think that that's the route that they should just continue to go the rest of the season, or do you feel that it should just be a little bit more of a mix of what we have seen?
Hard to say. I think, you know, like when Coach Ferentz was asked today about going for it at the end of the half there with two timeouts, 1:47 right. left, he mentioned it's up to the situation. And I think everything is situational. I think this week, if Iowa can get the pro set, can get Marcus Coker going, can get 150, 175 yards out of this rushing game, I think that's the best thing you can do against Northwestern is keep Dan Persa on the sidelines, because Dan Persa has ripped his defense's heart out before and is capable of doing it again. So I think it's situational. The no huddle was a shiny and new, and boy, it really worked really well. But you know what? It's not. It doesn't work every week, and every week is different. And I think you want to keep Persa on the sideline. And so I think they'll feed Coker this week, and maybe it'll work, maybe it won't.
This is something I asked a couple of the fifth-year seniors on the team, and I'll ask you because I know you were there, as was I. Iowa does have one win against Northwestern in the last 6 years.
Right.
Do you have any recollection of that game in particular?
Jake Christensen's greatest game, right?
Yeah, I would probably say that's what it was.
He hit some big long passes. Iowa, they exposed, I want to say it was McManus. There was a cornerback.
I think it was Sherrick McManus.
Yeah.
And then I want to say, too, Tyrell Sutton coming into that game had a comment about them being vanilla.
Yeah, yeah. But they took care. They got big plays against McManus, and the hitching goes. Trey Strauss, another TS. The hitching go worked that game. DJK and Strauss were terrific. Jay Christensen's best game. Iowa kind of changes stripes there. They found some of the hitching go, and Northwestern did nothing to adjust to it. I think Claiborne and Ballard were very, very young players, sophomores.
No, I think they were two freshmen.
Were they?
Or maybe Ballard might have been. No,
seven,
I think they were
seven, yeah. No, Ballard was a true freshman. Claiborne was a redshirt. Both those guys had an impact in that game. They both, C.J. Bechet didn't have the mobility.
Yeah.
So, you know, no Persa, no moving quarterback, and big plays on offense. Sure, if Iowa can dial that again, except Persa's playing Saturday, they're not getting out of that.
Well, and just a couple more, and I'll let you go here. Now, focusing on the fact that Northwestern has won in particular the last three games, and in all of them, I should say, Iowa's had a double-digit lead in each of those games and let it get away.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed maybe more of a buildup now for Northwestern among Iowa fans than before? Just not just given like the fact that Northwestern's had success, but between the fact that they're promoting this ANF day, they're having the black and gold stripe game they had against Penn State last year, it just seems like people are finally looking at this as, okay, this is a big game on this schedule.
Yeah, I think that, and I think whoever Iowa played at night, they'd be doing all this peripheral stuff, you know, the ANF and the stripe game and all that. It could be Indiana at night, and they would be doing that. But you noticed, you were at Penn State last week, and you probably noticed the beat Iowa signs.
Right.
You probably noticed a lot of the magazines, or not magazine, one magazine in particular, it was more like a tabloid newspaper, so, you know, basically had payback, retribution, revenge as a headline.
Yeah.
Not basically, it did. So there was, and then you heard the 104,000 people chanting beat Iowa. So Iowa, you know, Iowa was what Northwestern is to Penn State, and Penn State, or Northwestern is what Iowa was to Penn State, if that makes any sense. But yeah, there's a palpable sense of revenge catching them, because I was ahead of them for so long. But, you know, since 95, I think I was 5-9 against Northwestern. So recent history goes Northwestern's way.
Yeah, and the last win at Kinnick was in 2002.
Oh, yeah, 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 that's right. And that was a 60 to something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Northwestern has Iowa's attention, and they're, as far as I'm concerned, and this year in the Big Ten, they're fighting for the same bull turf.
Yeah. And last question here. With Saturday's game, how, I'm not going to ask you for a prediction because I know you have your podcast
do
for that. But
I do that, I do that tonight yet.
Yeah, so. But how much of an impact do you feel this game is going to have now on the rest of the season for Iowa, depending on the outcome?
Well, if Iowa wins this game, Iowa will win the next two games. They're playing JV schools the next two games. Indiana is just not. I think Indiana will be good with Kevin Wilson. It's not yet. I think Minnesota is in a deep, dark hole, and I'm not sure what's going to happen there, because I really like Jerry Kill, but his health is an impediment right now. So Iowa should win the next two games after Northwestern. If they beat Northwestern, it'll be 6-2. Go ahead and end in November. It'll be exactly where it was last year. Now, can it finish? Can it come through in November against the bulk of its schedule? You know, you look at Nebraska, Michigan, Michigan State, and then there's a Purdue in there too, which on the road is tricky. Iowa won at Purdue in 2005, was it? I was going to say three, but yeah, five sounds right. So it's been a while there too. They'll be 6-2, and everything will be in front of them. There'll be a chance, perhaps, to play for a spot in the Big Ten title games, or the Big Ten title game. So we'll see.
It's Mark Morehouse from the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Mark, thank you again. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. Once again, I'm joined by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rau. Chris, that had to be a tough game for you to watch there last Saturday, being a former player, just seeing the team struggle the way it did.
Well, it could have been either way. You know, you can say Penn State won this game and they had this game marked for a whole year or so, or either you can say Iowa struggled with the young guys that they have, but you got to give credit to Penn State from this game.
I guess I'll just start off here by asking you, we'll address both sides of the ball, starting with the offense. The fact that Ferentz said after the game that the bye had nothing to do with them coming out slow like they did. But the fact that they did have 2 weeks to prepare for this game and they were only able to score 3 points, how much of it is blame that you would put on the offense? How much of it is, okay, Penn State just did what they wanted to do defensively and it worked?
Well, I wouldn't say the bye had any effect at all. You know, some of the fans have been saying here, oh, well, so good news from the two-week bye or whatnot, but I don't think the bye had any impact on it. I think Coach Ferentz did it just like when I was playing, get some guys healthy, get the younger guys work, and, you know, ease in Penn State. And I'm sure they were working on Penn State not as much as they did this past week when they were actually in game week. But the fans need to understand that it's not always Penn State for those 2 weeks. We need to find the guys that's going to sit here and back up these guys as the starters. You know, that's why we have a deep defensive line. I know they're not playing as well as we would like to see, but we have a deep defensive backfield also. So, I mean, that's where you find the guys where we root for and say, hey, we can't wait till this guy sit here and play.
One comment that Ferentz made during his press conference Tuesday is regarding the offensive line. There were some concerns because there were sacks given up, and there were times where Vandenberg was feeling the pressure because Penn State was blitzing. He thought the O-line played pretty well. Marcus Coker had a decent game, but how much of it do you feel is just Penn State, again, being able to blitz and get to Vandenberg and get the pressure on him? And how much of it was, okay, Iowa had the chances, just things didn't work out?
I think it was both. I just feel that we had the chances that it didn't work out with us. Also, that Penn State, if you think about it, in the history, most teams are going to blitz us. You know, they're going to sit here and put 8 guys in a box and be like, hey, we want you to pass the ball, which is our strength this year. And they got us to pass the ball a lot more than what a lot of people actually see. But, like, going back, you know, it's one thing that, you know, fans want, and it's one thing that the coaches like. You know, the fans want to see us pass the ball. We got they're going to pass, and, you know, and then they say, what happened to the run game? So the biggest thing right now is just we're trying to figure out what are our identity as an offense.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because that was actually the next thing I wanted to ask you about. And because Ferentz was asked about identity as an offense. And one thing, I talked to James Vandenberg Tuesday, and he said it's not really a thing where they're looking for an identity, because they don't care how they win or put up points. They just want to be able to do so. Do you feel that they need to establish an identity still? And if so, what do you believe the identity should be?
Like any team, you know, you always want to establish a run first. That's foremost. If you can't run the ball, you have no chance, especially in the end of the game when you need to run the ball. I feel that they don't really need to find an identity this year, just because James' strength is passing and our offense always in the past was running the ball. But if we can do both of them effective, we'll be fine.
Now, you brought up the defense, and one thing that I kind of picked up on that I find alarming is, yeah, okay, they only gave up 13 points, but Penn State was able to drive the ball down the field. And you consider there were 3 possessions in particular where Penn State, even though they only came away with 2 field goals and actually McGloin threw an interception on the third drive to Micah Hyde, they moved the ball 88, 81, and 90 yards on this team. And this is all before the fourth quarter and before the turnover started piling up. How much of that do you feel played an impact on how the game ended at that point? Because it was a position where Iowa was only down 3 points, but then once the turnover started happening, I couldn't tell if it was just the defense being gassed at that point because they were out on the field for so long, or just how would you describe it?
Well, as we know, the past with Penn State, they always have a multiple offense, and our defense is a bend but don't break, one of those deals. Like you were saying, we gave up 13 points. I'd be happy to give up 13 points every week, to be honest with you, in this conference. But the biggest thing was that Penn State was able to run a ball. Any team that'd be able to run a ball at will the way they did this past week, and then on top of it pass with some electric receivers that they have. They don't have the guys that they had in the past. But, I mean, if Penn State can pretty much pick and choose what type of offense they wanted to run. If they wanted a pass play, they were going to get it. You know, they can run it up the gut here and there, left and right. It was just one of those deals where it was just a Penn State game. Our defense, you know, like a lot of people say, it's a lot of young guys, not a lot of experience, but in the back end, as we see. But, I mean, it's just one of those deals that is it's going to be – we still got five, six games left, and we should be okay. It's no concerns. It's just that we need to really put together some three and outs, as a lot of people have been talking about. It's more, again, some three and outs, getting our offense back on the field. Like you say, football is all about possessions, and that's what Iowa's about. I felt that if Iowa get jumped on pretty fast, that our defense is – it was kind of tough to sit there and hold on to a lead, because if we watched that game, it was always about who was going to score last in this game, just from the get-go, because Penn State can put up 40 points or whatnot against any other team, but when it comes to Iowa, any team you ask me, it comes down to possession. Who can hold the ball the longest and who can sit there and score when they have a chance?
With the defense and the fact that Penn State was able to move the ball so effectively, was it something where you felt maybe the defensive players were out of position, or do you feel they're in the right spot but maybe just didn't get there fast enough and Penn State was able to execute their offense?
I think personally, one, I know we haven't talked about this, and we talked about this last week before the game. It came down to quarterback. I think when Rob Bowden was in, Penn State didn't have much life compared to the other guy. The other guy went and took care of business.
McGowan
took care of business. I feel that McGowan is their quarterback. I don't understand why Joe Pa is still shuffling these guys around. I don't know, is it something going on between the two or whatnot, but I feel McGowan is the guy. He needs to be the guy. I would hate to mess around with a kid like that who's actually making plays and having a lot of success in this offense.
Now, moving forward here, this is kind of, as you know, a big week. When you hear the word Northwestern, being a former player and being around for a lot of those defeats that Iowa's been dealt by Northwestern the last few years, what comes to mind?
I think when I think of Northwestern, I feel that Northwestern is just like Iowa State, the little brother that's always just sitting there bugging you left and right. Northwestern is one heck of a team. Pat Fitzgerald or either Randy Walker brought their teams to Iowa, here to Kinnick, or either we went there and they gave us trouble. It was just one of those deals where we always had to fight to win that game. That was just one game you look forward to. It's like, gosh, I don't know what's coming next. But Northwestern, when I think about them, man, it's one heck of a team, a spread offense with their quarterback now, Dan Persa. Hopefully he's able to play this week. But one of the things is just that Northwestern is just one of those teams you just can't you just got a knack where it's just like, get these guys out of here. I just want to get rid of them.
So, in other words, they were a team that when you lost to them, like, it was one of those deals where you're sitting there thinking, how did we just lose this game?
Pretty much. And they actually won a game. It's one of those deals that they played smart and they played sound and technique.
So when you think back, I know you weren't on the team last year, but much like your junior and senior years, last year's game as well, Iowa had a double-digit lead in 08. You guys had a 17-3 lead right before halftime. You had the muff punt right before the half that Northwestern scored on. And then 2 years ago, you were ahead 10-0 before Ricky Stanzi got hurt. And then last year, Iowa had a 17-7 lead before Northwestern had those two fourth-quarter drives. How much of it is just them being able to, you know, play a better game, and how much of it is just like, how much of it do you pin on just not being able to finish the job?
I would say it can go either way. I just feel that Northwestern just comes out and just play balls to walls, you know. Northwestern, you got to give it to Pat Fitzgerald. It brings a lot of energy, and when his guys see his energy goes up, their energy go up also. I just feel that, you know, it's just one of those teams where, like, you have played to their level of play, even if you're a better team or whatnot. And I was watching a game last week with when they played Michigan, where I thought they had a really good chance of actually playing well and winning that game. And when you see Denard Robertson have three interceptions and you make him play under center and not play to his strength, you got a chance at winning. And I really thought that Northwestern was going to win that game. But we'll see this weekend with the Northwestern-Iowa game. But Northwestern is just one of those tough teams, man, just to get over, unless you sit there and just punch them in the mouth and just knock them out.
You made the comparison to Iowa State. Do you get the sense that when they do play Iowa that maybe there's a little bit more incentive there for them, or they maybe are a little bit more hyped up for this game than they would be for other games that you probably watch on film and when you're trying to study for an opponent like them?
Well, I think in the past, I think Northwestern game usually always came around a team that we'd look forward to if it was Wisconsin or either Ohio State. Ohio State game was right after the Northwestern game my senior year or whatnot, and we still had a chance to play for the Rose Bowl. But it was one of those deals where Northwestern just comes out and just play hard, like I always said. Just don't know. I personally don't know, but I just know that they came out and won a game. Nothing too crazy. There haven't been any bad calls except for one year when Clint Solomon had – when we went down there, I want to say it was 06 or something, 05.
Well, 05 is a game that you guys had the you had the two-touchdown lead there, and then they came back and recovered the onside kick late.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was with the onside kick, and I was just like, oh, goodness, here we go.
You mentioned Dan Persa, and obviously it just seems like when he's in there for him, they're a completely different team. Like, I think back to last year's game when Iowa went there and lost. He got hurt. He ruptured his Achilles tendon on that touchdown pass he threw. And after that, it wasn't just their offense that struggled. Their defense just started struggling as well. And then earlier this season, yeah, they won their first two games, but then they had a hard time. They couldn't beat Army. And then Persa comes back, and they've built big leads the last couple weeks on good teams like Illinois and Michigan, and then their defense just hasn't been able to hold up. How much of an impact does a guy like that have on a team?
He has a huge impact. Dan Persa is one of those guys I've seen in the media where, like, they were just hyping him up for the Heisman and everything. The guy, he means a lot to the team. He's just one of those guys that sit there and everybody play for and just want to do well. And I feel that hopefully this guy's able to play and get over this injury or whatnot. And I'm cheering for him to do well against anybody but the Hawks. But it's just one of those deals. It's a guy that you cheer for.
What is it about him that makes him so effective? Like, when you would prepare, I know in 09 he came in for Mike Kafka, and it just seemed like they were able to move the ball, you know, in little increments, it felt like, in that game 2 years ago.
I think he's one of those guys that just study. And also on the field, he's very elusive. And that's one of the biggest things. If you got an elusive quarterback back there, man, it's one of those guys that sit there and have a defensive coordinator pulling hairs out of his head or whatnot. But I think personally, he studies a lot. And also, he's one of those guys that sit there and make plays.
And now, this Saturday, the fact that this is a night game, the fact that you have all these things going on, with it being ANF Day, and you have the black and gold stripe stadium look like they had last year for the Penn State game, you see all the buildup. How much of it is the fact that they are playing against a team that has, quite frankly, just dominated Iowa, if you will, the last five of the last 6 years?
I was getting ready to say, it's going to be a lot of emotion in this game, believe it or not. It's just one of those deals. It's a night game, black and gold. It's a couple of alumni that I know that's coming back, a couple of former players. And it's just one of those deals. It's just people are going to be here, be ready. For the people that's not able to make the 11 o'clock, the 2:30 games, they're there. They will be there. And tailgating is going to be crazy. I just think it's going to be electric here this weekend for the next 2 weeks, actually. But I feel that most people are ready to see Northwestern goes down, and especially since it's here at home at night, it's going to be a great atmosphere here.
How much has this? Do you think this game has been built up, like, beyond this week? And I'm talking like during the off season and whatnot. And I asked because a couple of the current players I did get a chance to talk to Tuesday said, even though the mantra is one game at a time, back in the summer they'd have people coming up saying, hey, is this a year you guys are going to finally beat this team? Or this would be a huge game for you to win this year after losing the last three. Do you get the sense that that's something that's maybe gone on quite a bit?
Well, every year in the summertime where we don't really have anything football focused outside of, you know, just skills and drills and just working out with Coach Doyle. Coach Doyle always leaves some notes to us and also some pictures, something to keep us to remember about a team or just all teams that we have on the schedule, to be honest with you. And some teams we focus on more here and there or whatnot, just either if it's on the road or either it's at home, some quotes in the past year or so about a team winning or whatnot. I know Coach Doyle has been telling these guys all year long outside of the game that they play that week that we need to beat Wisconsin. We need to beat Northwestern, Ohio State, every team pretty much on the schedule. But I'm sure that they've been banging this in their head like, hey, these guys talking crap. They got nothing else to say. You know, we don't have any response other than, hey, like, we're going to see you on the field on Saturday.
And with that said, are you ready to move on here to the games?
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
All right. By the way, if you want to participate in this week's HawkeyeDrive.com pick 'em, you still have time. Deadline is Friday at 5 p.m. Central. All you got to do is go to HawkeyeDrive.com. You have the page 24 Heisman Road at the top there. Just hover over that. You'll see the pick 'em page. Click that. List of 10 games. Make sure to include a score with your Iowa Northwestern prediction. We'll use that for any tiebreakers that may exist. And just email the picks at HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Congratulations to my dad. My dad won the pick'em last week, and I was kind of surprised when I was like going through the results, and it was just in all the submissions. And it was like, yeah, that was my dad that won. So, yeah. So, Dad, if you're listening, congratulations. And we're actually going to start here with a pretty big Big Ten game that features two teams that are also in Iowa's division: Michigan, Michigan State. Wolverines, we mentioned they beat Northwestern last week. They're ranked 11th in the country, 6-0 overall, 2-0 in the Big Ten. Michigan State is coming off a bye week after beating Ohio State in its Big Ten opener. They're now 4-1 overall, 1-0. Winner of this game is going to be in first place in the division. How do you see this one playing out?
How I see this game playing out, I'm going to go straight forward and be honest with you. I think Michigan State just going to win this game. I figure that Michigan State has a lot going for themselves. They're coming off a big, huge game, beating Ohio State, even though Ohio State is down at Ohio State. Michigan State watched the game with Michigan and Northwestern. I'm sure there's no doubts about it. The game's at home. This is a chance to beat Michigan for 4 years in a row. This just doesn't happen at all. I figure that Michigan State, they have what Michigan don't have in a great electrifying duo at running back, even though they have Denard Robertson. But I figure that Michigan State and Coach D'Antonio, with his contract extension also, that they'll take care of business and be very, very physical. This is going to be a pretty physical game.
I agree with you on both counts. The fact that it will be a physical game and the fact that I also think Michigan State's going to win. I just think it's one of those things that, you know, Michigan, they've had a really nice season, but this is easily the best defense that they have faced up to this point. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the physical toll comes in. And as you said, too, the fact that the Spartans, they can come into this game knowing, hey, we've beaten these guys before. We know we can beat them. That coupled with the fact that they have the home crowd, I just think that this is a game. I do think eventually down the road, Michigan will probably start having the upper hand in this rivalry. Mm-hmm. But right now, I agree. I think Michigan State gets it done on Saturday. Moving along here, another game featuring two top 25 teams. Baylor, ranked 20th. They disposed of Iowa State last week at home. They're traveling out to College Station to visit an A&M team that just barely got by Texas Tech last week. Actually, almost blew another double-digit lead in the process. But nevertheless, A&M got the win. This is a pretty big game here as well. I'm going to go with A&M. But mainly because I think Baylor's defense, again, I brought it up, I don't think it's that good. And I think A&M's going to be able to pound the ball and kind of control the time of possession and whatnot. But you got to be leery of A&M at this point because it's becoming a trend here that they just, for whatever reason, don't know how to hold on to big leads. And with a guy like Robert Griffin III, he's fully capable of bringing Baylor back. But I do think that at the end of the day, I can't picture A&M losing this game at home, so I'm going to go with them.
I agree with you. I'm going to go with A&M also. I was thinking about this game before I actually arrived here. I was like, give me a reason one reason for Baylor to actually win this game outside of RG3 and the receiver Kendall Wright. I just feel that A&M, it's their time. They're able to settle now. They sit here and like, hey, we have a good offense. We have two electrifying running backs. We have a pretty solid receiving core, and they have a solid quarterback. It's just that he needs to bring down his turnovers. I think that's the biggest thing with him, because Christian McMichael and Cyrus, those two guys are really good. And if they have to pound the ball, they will pound the ball. I just need a reason to pick Baylor. That's the only reason why I would say Texas A&M, but I think Texas A&M had the experience and they just have a better team overall.
Moving along, going back into the Big Ten here, Illinois is now 16th in the country, 6-0, coming off a win over Indiana last week, hosting an Ohio State team that I'm still kind of perplexed by what happened last weekend, because, first of all, the fact that Ohio State actually had a 3-touchdown lead in Lincoln after the way they looked against Michigan State, and then the fact that Nebraska still managed to come back and win that game, and because of Taylor Martinez actually throwing the ball, not just him solely running. I'm just going to say I feel like that game may have dictated the rest of Ohio State's season. Just the way that game got lost. And it sounds like Braxton Miller should be ready to go here Saturday. I know he suffered a big knee injury in that game, but if he can't make it through and they got to go back to Bousherman again, I just don't see how they get it done against an Illinois team that's proven that they have a pretty solid defense as well, and they could put up points with Shieldhouse and getting the ball to A.J. Jenkins. So I actually think Illinois is going to keep this going, and I see the Illini winning.
I'm going to disagree with you. I feel that Ohio State played well until Braxton Miller went down. That I think Braxton Miller injury had pretty much messed up that game and just gave everything back to Nebraska. I feel that injury was huge. Ohio State has a really solid defense. Their offense just need to get going. When Browseman came in that game last week, I was just like, oh, my gosh. This guy is throwing ducks. He's throwing the ball into the ground. Where is he throwing the ball, to be honest with you? It just seemed like he's a senior that is just uncomfortable back there. He don't know what he's not saying that he's not – he don't know what he's doing. It's just that his balls is just overthrown or underthrown. Where is he throwing the ball, like I said before? They have a good running game. Hyde
– And they're going to get Heron back this week.
Hall. They have some running backs back there. Now, I think that they're going to probably put those running backs in some space to make Illinois defense play a little tougher. But I figure that – Ohio State's defense is going to show up, and those guys got embarrassed just in the second half alone. I figure that once Taylor Martinez had got going, their running back had just took off in the second half. The guy didn't have anything in the first half, if you guys realize and watch that game. It's just one of those deals. Ohio State's just not going to lose three games in a row. I figure it's not a homer pick. It's just I just don't see Ohio State either. Just because they're on the road, it's another loss. But I figure what – Jenkins, man, this guy scares me. Hopefully Howard take the challenge of Jenkins, but I figure that Ohio State defense will show up, and I think who's going to have a big game in this game is Ohio State's defensive line.
All right, moving along here, we got next game features two teams that we disagreed on last week. LSU made me look pretty smart, beating Florida the way they did at home. Tennessee, on the other hand, you look pretty good there picking Georgia to win that game last week, and now Tennessee's also without Tyler Bray. He's out 6 weeks, I believe. So this is the second week in a row that LSU is going to be facing a backup quarterback. And I know that this game's in Knoxville. I know Tennessee probably should have won that game last year in Baton Rouge if it wasn't for having too many men on the field and giving LSU an untimed down at the end of the fourth quarter for Jordan Jefferson to win the game with a touchdown. But they're completely different teams. Tennessee's not going to be the same without Bray. LSU's defense is just, again, they've proven that they just dominated Florida. Mm-hmm. And that game could have been even worse if they don't take that fake punt off the board. I just think LSU's probably going to win this game, I'd say close to 20 points. I think this is not going to be a close one. I see LSU getting it done.
Well, I was really pulling for Florida. I just think, one, you just got those freshmen, and then Trey Burton back there just trying to help out the freshmen with the at quarterback. I thought Florida had a chance. You know, Florida has always have a pretty good defense, and Chris Rainey and Demps. It just didn't work out with the offense that they had, and freshmen didn't have much time to actually prepare for a team like LSU. I was hoping and praying that they actually put it off. That was the biggest thing with me. But this game's not going to be close, just like you said. Tennessee just have to just hold off the storm as much as they can. I think that's the biggest thing, and just be able to hold the ball and just run into the game's over with.
The next game, this one's really intriguing to me because you have a Texas team that really just got exposed last weekend by Oklahoma. That game was not even close. They fell 11 spots in the top 25. I thought they were overrated to begin with going into that game. That now I think they're at about where they should be. They're back at home facing an Oklahoma State team that comes in undefeated, and that offense, as I've said before, they're just firing on all cylinders. I actually see it continue. I know Texas is at home, and I know Texas has had success the week after playing Oklahoma every year. I believe Mac Brown is actually 13-0 as Texas's head coach the week after OU. But I think that comes to an end here. I think Oklahoma State keeps this going because I don't see Texas. I think Texas can put up points, but I don't see them being able to keep up with Oklahoma State. And Oklahoma dropped 55 on Texas this past weekend. I don't think Oklahoma State might not put up that many points, but they're going to put up points. And I just think that they're too talented. They don't really have to do much defensively. If they just get like two or three stops in a game, their offense is powerful enough that they could just put the game out of reach. And I just see it kind of playing out that way. I like Oklahoma State winning this game.
I agree to disagree with you in a couple of different areas. I feel that Texas just got exposed on their offense for the most part. Their special teams played pretty good. Yeah, they got a special teams touchdown. Their defense played solid. I mean, when you got electric firing quarterback, I think is 1B to actual Andrew Luck out there in Stanford. I figure that Oklahoma's defense won that game.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I figured that, yes, you got some young quarterbacks, young gunners back there just doing whatever they can. But I figured that Texas is going to be able to run this ball. They got some young guys. They got some older guys. Let's not forget Oklahoma State defense is not all that also. Let's not forget that. And, yes, Oklahoma State's offense is really, really good. But I figured that this is going to be a good game. I really want to pick Texas for the upset. I'm going to sit here and put on a record. I really want Texas to win this game, no doubt. But I have to pick Oklahoma State just because of their offense. It's just so electrifying. But I really feel Texas can win this game, and it will not be an upset. I don't think it'll be upset at all.
I think Texas could win this game because they're at home, but you mentioned their defense not being all – Oklahoma State's defense not being all that special. But, again, I just go back to the fact that they don't really have to be. When you have Brandon Weeden completing, like, literally every single pass that he throws, and you're seeing other guys besides Justin Blackmon contributing to this offense and putting up points, I just don't know how you're going to stop a team like that.
I was going to say, outside of Texas A&M, no one put pressure on – Oklahoma State, Texas will be able to. Let's not forget about that pressure, because Texas is known to give pressure, especially on the outside or whatnot. But like you said, it's tough. It's a tough one. I'm sure we both want Texas to win this game, and we know that they can win this game, especially being at home. But it's just one of those deals. I think if Texas was actually on the road, that'd be okay. But will they win a game? Their chances go down a lot more. But I really feel that I would not be shocked if they win this game at all.
The next game was one that at the beginning of the season I probably would have never thought I'd have on here, but lo and behold, I do. Virginia Tech is going to Wake Forest. They come into this game 5-1. They just got by Miami at home last week. They needed a touchdown run from Logan Thomas in the final minute to win that game. Wake Forest, team that I literally had not given much thought to at all, but you look at them. They're 4-1. They're actually 3-0 in the ACC. They're coming off a victory last weekend over Florida State. a team that was just, you know, a month ago, they were in the top 10. And we were talking about them. You were talking about them possibly beating Oklahoma. Wake Forest just beat that team. And really, you take away a bad offensive pass interference call in overtime of that opener they lost to Syracuse, and this team could be 5-0 and in the top 25 right now. I'll just say this, without knowing a whole lot about the Demon Deacons, I actually think they get it done here. Because I just, with Virginia Tech, look, they, the last 2 weeks, they looked bad against Clemson. And then they like I said, they needed a last-minute touchdown to beat Miami at home. And you're now, and those were both games at Lane Stadium. Now this team's going on the road against a Wake Forest team that has to have a load of confidence at this point, just coming off a big victory over Florida State, and the fact that they are 3-0 in the ACC at the moment. And I'm not sold on Wake Forest being a team that wins the ACC or even wins its division because they're in it with Clemson, but this game, I think this is theirs for the taking. The only concern I would have is having a letdown after beating a team like Florida State, but I actually think the Demon Deacons are going to find a way to pull this one out.
Oh, goodness. Here we go. I was going to say that Virginia Tech is in a very similar position that Florida State was in, even though Florida State was coming off of two losses. I figure with Virginia Tech beating Miami last week, it's just one of those deals that you can see this season going downhill. After this game against Wake Forest, it can just keep going up, you know, staying steady or whatnot. I figure, like you say, neither one of us know about Wake Forest at all. I mean, I have no clue other than they had an Orange Bowl run a couple years back. But they're getting the job done. They're getting the job done, and I'm happy for them. But I figure Beamer Ball on either side was going to play in a factor. I know Beamer Ball is very, very key at home, but I figured that Virginia Tech was going to sit there and strap it up, go on the road, and take care of business.
Next game in the is one in the SEC, and this is actually a pretty big game now with Florida playing Auburn, because Florida has now lost two straight. Granted, they lost to Alabama and LSU. They lost to probably two of the best teams in the country. But now they're going on the road again with a true freshman quarterback into an environment that is going to be very hostile, like any SEC environment is. Auburn just got whipped by Arkansas last week. I think Florida's a better team, and if John Brantley was there, hadn't got hurt and was playing in this game, I'd probably pick the Gators to win. But I just think there's going to be issues here still with Florida, and with this game being in Auburn, I think the Tigers are going to play better at home, and I just think that they're going to get a bounce back victory here. So I actually do like Auburn to win this game, even though I've been very critical of them this year.
Man, this is one of those games you can just sit there and toss a coin and just like, I am going right. Florida heads, right. Auburn tails. Both teams just all over the place. But at the same time, like you said, Florida lost to two of the best two teams in the country right now, back to back weeks. It's just one of those tough ones. I'm going to just say it. I'm just hoping Florida win. That's it. I'm going to just hope that Florida wins this game. But Auburn's at home. That's the only deal with this game. Auburn's at home. I'm going to take Auburn.
K-State, they've actually they're starting to impress me more and more here now. They're ranked 17th, 5-0 overall. They're going to on the road to play a Texas Tech team that just suffered its first loss of the season this past weekend to A&M and almost came back and won that game. But I like even though it's in Lubbock, I like K-State here simply because their defense is proven. It's one of the better defenses in the Big 12. And they've found ways. They kept Missouri down for the most part this past weekend. They were able to force turnovers of Robert Griffin the week before. They got a goal line stand against Miami. I just see their defense continuing to perform better, more and more and better as the season goes on. And I just don't know if Texas Tech has enough to be able to put up 40 points on them like they did it on A&M last week. So, yeah, even though Texas Tech's at home, I'm going to go with K-State.
I'm agree with you. Kansas State is one of those teams. I'm sure both of us is like, yeah, they got a lot of not senior leadership, but a lot of veteran guys with right. Old school Bill Snyder at helm. It's just one of those deals. This guy gets those guys going. I mean, like, this guy is old school compared to some of these younger guys. Great-grandfathers, probably some of these guys. But one of those deals is just one of that Kansas State will take care of business on the road. They got a stout defense. They got a stout running back. Look out for Brown and run rod on them.
big game in the Pac-12 next week, possibly a Pac-12 championship game. Who knows? Arizona State coming off a win over Utah that we both saw coming. Now 18th in the top 25. They're going to Eugene to take on an Oregon team that's ranked 9th and has been doing very well since losing the opener to LSU. However, suffered a big blow last weekend in that win over Cal. Michael James, he's obviously not going to play this week, and I don't know if he's going to play again this season. That just looked nasty, that hit. If this game was in Tempe, I'd be more inclined to go Arizona State, and I've liked them all season long. I think Osweiler's a good quarterback, and obviously Vontaze Burfict might be one of the, if he's not the best defensive player in the country, he's easily the most feared. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the other, at least with this game, I think the other talent that's there in Oregon on that offense, guys like Darren Thomas and the receivers that they got, I think they're going to step it up, and they're going to win this game for LaMichael James. And let's not forget, they have another solid running back as well that could get it done. I don't think, even though LaMichael James is a huge loss, I don't think it's going to hurt him here in this game in particular, especially with it being at home. I just have a hard time picking against Oregon in this game. I'm going to go with the Ducks.
I agree with you. Oregon got a lot of things that's going well for themselves, but like you say, LaMichael James is a different beast. His guy is – he's pretty much the offense outside of Darren Thomas. I mean, Darren Thomas, he has the ball in his hand every play, and he can, you know, dump it, run it, pass it. It's one of those deals where it's going to be a huge hole to fill, but I don't think it's that huge of a hole, you know, when you got guys with the talent they have. And with Vontaze Burfict, I don't really think he's going to really have a huge impact on this game, just because I think Oregon's going to have those guys running sideline to sideline. If you have Arizona State defense running sideline to sideline, these guys can get tired. And if you run the ball up the gut after a while, it's like, gosh, I'm tired, man. Mm-hmm. Just falling on these guys on offense or whatnot. But if I think the key is just for Oregon to just run their offense. That's it. Oregon run their offense, play some solid defense as we've seen. They will be okay, and I'm picking Oregon at home.
And now finally, Iowa playing against Northwestern Saturday evening. It is a 6 p.m. Central kickoff if you're going to Kinnick Stadium or if you're just watching it on the Big Ten Network at home or at a bar, wherever you would be watching the game. Again, Northwestern has won 5 of the last 6, including the last 3, and actually has a 3-game winning streak at Kinnick Stadium. Iowa's last home win was back in 2002 during that Orange Bowl season. Chris, I'll give you the floor here.
I figure the keys to the game is, one, for both teams coming off from losses or whatnot. Iowa been off the week before, but I figure that it's time to win now. It's a lot of fans that are sitting here just feeling like crap with meltdowns and everything. I figure that the fans will be there this weekend. I know they'll be there, you know, just to cheer for the guys, you know, regardless ups or downs. But they're going to give it to the guys if they don't come out of this victoriously. But I figure that we're going to get on the ground running, and Marcus Coker is going to be our key to the game. I figure that Coach Ferentz is going to go back to the run. He's going to go back into the run and then go to the pass. I figure that we're going to have to play some tough defense, and I figure that the fans will be the sixth man, I mean, not the sixth man, but the 12th man, out there this Saturday to help the guys out. The fans want to see the guys do well, and I know it is. It's just tough sometimes when, you know, you have a younger team mixed with some guys with not as much experience. So I figure that the Hawks will win, but it's going to be a really close game. If the score even get to 21, the first team that scores 17-21 points will win this game. I just figured that the Hawks need to come out with a good start. And let's not forget that Northwestern doesn't have the best defense. No. And if we can pass the ball, I mean, we can do really good, because we will be all right if we can pass the ball. We don't have to pass the ball a lot now, but we need to be able to pass the ball in third down situations if we need to, and run the ball also. We can't run away from running the ball. We just need guys just to step it up. And like I said, the fans will be there. The environment will be there. Let's show up this week. We need this win, actually, you know, just to get some momentum.
I didn't do this last week. I'm going to do it this week. I don't see Iowa winning this game. And here's the thing. I think
initially I was thinking this is going to be a shootout because you brought up a good point. Northwestern's defense has struggled, and they looked bad last weekend in the second half of that game against Michigan. And conversely, Iowa's defense has struggled. But the more I think about it, and you, another point I agree with you on is the whole thing of first to 20. And the reason I agree with you on that is because Northwestern, the game plan I see them coming with really isn't that much different from what they have done in years past, which is just picking up little bits at a time. And where I feel Northwestern has had success offensively in years past is when they would have first down and 10, then it'd be like second and 6, then it'd be third and 3, because 3 yards is obviously a lot more manageable on third down than, say, third and 8. Iowa's got to get them into, Iowa's got to be able to stop them on first and second down on defense. I feel that that has to happen. But after what I saw last weekend, I'm just not sure, because Northwestern has a better offense than Penn State does, I think. And the fact that Penn State was able to move the ball almost the length of the field 3 times, to me, it doesn't matter that they only scored 6 points there. It's the fact that Northwestern's a team that could put up points. They could put up touchdowns. They did it in the fourth quarter of that game last year. I look at this, and it's one of those things where if Northwestern, I see them just kind of dominating the time of possession a little bit, kind of like Penn State did, if they're able to move the ball effectively. And if that happens, you have to wonder about the identity again with the offense and just how that's going to shape out. Are they going to be able to run more no huddle? Are they going to have to revert more back to the running game to stick and be able to stick with the game plan?
Go ahead. I was going to say one thing, now that you said something about that. I really feel that Northwestern is probably going to try to sit there and get our defense exhausted. That's
exactly what I was getting at.
That was the only thing that I was going to say with Northwestern. If they get our defense exhausted, we have no chance.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is just I feel if Persa doesn't get knocked out of this game, now if that happens, that changes everything, but if he's able to play through the majority of this game, if not the entire game, I just feel like that's something that's going to happen. If they keep moving the chains, you're right. The defense is going to probably end up getting exhausted here. And it's not. I do think Iowa is going to score more than 3 points. I think the offense will get it going. But at the end of the day, it's just one of those things where the amount of possessions that the offense has, I just feel like it's going to be limited. And if they aren't able to take advantage of the few opportunities they get, I just feel like Northwestern is going to just remain in control. So with all that being said, I know that the build-up's there, the fans are excited. I get all that. And I wouldn't be surprised if Iowa did win this game. But until I see it, I can't go with it. And I'm going to say Northwestern probably wins 24-21, I'll say.
I was going to say, like you say, I think this game really falls down to Iowa running their offense. And Dan Persa, how long will he be available in this game, and will he be Dan Persa of what we know? If Dan Persa leg don't let him be able to run around and, you know, and be elusive as he used to be in the past, that limits them to a lot. If Northwestern has to throw the ball a little bit more or either run the ball with their running back, I don't think Northwestern really will win this game at all just because he's not able to win the game with his feet when he has to. And yes, he'll run a ball when he has to, but how about those plays when you're playing with the defensive backs and you got those guys covering the receivers and here we go, scrabble. We're scrambling. So I really don't see that. If Dan Persis starts scrambling, we're going to have a long day. But if not, like you say, if Dan Persa is not 100% or wherever he needs to be able to play his effectively like he has in the last couple of years, I don't think Northwestern have a chance.
I want to make a couple points here. First of all, for those that are listening and are thinking, okay, how could you be picking against Iowa? I'm just telling you what I honestly think. And to prove a point, last year, I didn't think Iowa was going to win the Insight Bowl against Missouri. As a matter of fact, the score I gave was exactly what it was before Micah Hyde had that pick six. But the other thing, too, people talk about how Northwestern, you know, they're coming on a 3-game losing streak. and they blew big leads against Illinois and Michigan. You know what? Last year, before they played Iowa, they had a 21-0 lead at Penn State, and they lost that game. So it's not like we haven't seen this with Northwestern before. No, nothing that Northwestern does should surprise anybody at this point, whether they win or lose. Because if they win, you know what? They have a good coach, as you brought up before, Pat Fitzgerald. He knows what he's doing. But if they lose, you know, how many people are – whenever Northwestern loses a game, are there a whole lot of people that are like, I can't believe Northwestern lost this game? No. So nothing that that team does should surprise anybody. Again, I think Iowa will play better this Saturday, but it's just one of those things that until they actually beat this team, I just can't see them getting the job done, especially against a quarterback that has proven that he can move the ball on them, and they get it into a situation in the second half where they could start seizing control of the game like they have the last few years. So at the end of the day, that's why I just feel like the Wildcats are probably going to win this game. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. I'd like to thank Mark Morehouse for actually coming on this week, being a guest, and for the segment that he joined us for. Chris, thank you again, and thank you for putting up with me not picking Iowa this week. For Mark Morehouse, Chris Rowell, I'm Brendan Stiles. Remember, if you could sign up, if you are interested in becoming a member of HawkeyeDrive.com, we offer a 3-day free trial. We also offer monthly and yearly subscriptions, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. You get access to all premium content on the site. For Mark, Chris, I'm Brendan, signing off.